Hi, and welcome to Journey of the Monkey King, a chapter-by-chapter discussion of Journey to the West. I'm Quiva, and I'm joined by my friend MJ.
Hello!
So, in Chapter 1, the stone monkey was born, became the handsome monkey king, and then went traveling in search of immortality and became a student of Patriarch Sabaody, who gave him the name Sun Wukong.
So, yes, that was really interesting, and that was a lot to happen in one chapter.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of feel like that's... I mean, it's almost if, like, we divided it up into a trilogy or, like, a TV season, that would almost be, like, one season arc. And this is, like, the... How long was that chapter, just in terms of page count?
It's about 12 pages in the ebook copy that I have here.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's not...
That's a lot of... Wow, that's some concise prose there. That's some Hemingway shit.
Like when I read out a bit, like, and then he traveled to one continent and it took him 3 days. That's basically also what the book says.
Oh, okay.
I'm not skipping over huge amounts of detail. It just kind of does that itself.
Hey, wow. So clipping along at a pretty good pace then.
Yeah, and some pretty big things are going to happen in this chapter too.
Ooh.
Yeah, Wukong's journey goes by at a fair clip.
Amazing. I am very excited about this. I'm also slightly tired and cradling a cup of coffee because I was actually, I am a terrible person and was an hour late to this because I overslept.
It's okay. I'm cradling my second huge mug of tea as well.
Yeah, caffeine. All the caffeine. No, yeah, I'm hyped for this. And again, I love this podcast because it's just story time for me.
It's story time for everyone except me.
you're the one who has to do literally all of the work, and that is the way I like it.
Yeah. So under Sabaody, Wukong starts learning etiquette, scriptures, doctrines, and calligraphy, as well as doing chores for the school. Again, there's not a huge amount of detail on Wukong's education. It does just kind of skip over it.
We don't actually get the secrets to immortality?
Not...
I feel cheated. Yeah.
There is... We will get a poem that describes it a little bit.
But you're not reading out the poems. And this leads me to suspect, Quiva, that you're hoarding this secret.
I can neither confirm nor deny whether I've become immortal from reading this book.
Fair. Would you become immortal if you had the chance to? Like, if that was an option, would you take it? Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think I would. It feels like it would be... I don't know. I think possibly the two media adaptations or media discussions of it where I feel it would be most... That I feel would be most accurate for me is in the spoilers, but in The Good Place where, you know... existing forever kind of turns your brain into soup. Or did you're a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan?
Yeah.
Did you read I think it was Life, the Universe and Everything, where
the Eternally Prolonged.
While Bagger, the Eternally Prolonged, just gets so bored and bitter and done with the entire thing that he decides to embark on a project of delivering a personal insult to every single person in the universe. And I think if I were immortal, that's the only two ways it could possibly go.
I mean, I think there's a distinction between you won't just die of old age and you cannot possibly die. Like,
fair.
The compromise they reach, again, spoilers for The Good Place apparently in this podcast, you know, is you live as long as you want and you can, the door is left open to return to the universe. You're not trapped in it. That is an offer I would immediately take up.
Okay. Yeah, that maybe. I don't know. The whole kind of concept of living forever is a little terrifying for me, and I just kind of...
Yeah, but, well, for me, the concept of dying forever sounds much worse, but...
Yeah, I'm getting us very off track here now. We got quite... quite existential there for a moment.
Yeah, no, I sympathize with Monkey here, trying to not die.
Do we ever kind of find out where this drive comes from, this quest to live forever?
I mean, I think it's just a pretty natural thing to want. The whole plot of the Epic of Gilgamesh, like the oldest story that we have in the world, is about a man who just wants the secrets of not dying.
Ooh, yeah. If you're interested, actually, in that, there is an BBC Radio 4 actually did an excellent documentary and kind of play-by-play of that. And it is really, really fascinating how it kind of ties into, parts of it kind of tie into the flood myth in Judeo-Christian lore, mythology. Is that the word I'm looking for? Also super gay. Really gay.
Oh, what's his name? What's Gilgamesh's mate's name again?
I have no idea, but he's like proto-twink. and he's fabulous. I cannot remember, but they're definitely very gay, very soulmates.
Oh, absolutely.
So this is pure my brain bouncing off the walls. But apparently, someone in the 19th century, don't quote me on this could be totally apocryphal, but someone in the 19th century translating the Epic of Gilgamesh in the British Museum of History, I think, found that there were significant parallels to the flood in the Bible, and as a particular kind of brand of religious historian who was very much looking for historical clues to biblical events, he got so excited about all this that he apparently spontaneously disrobed and ran all the way around the museum butt naked, just in excitement over, yay, biblical floods. I would love to have the ability to get that excited about literally anything ever.
Oh, that's fantastic. There is Echidnu, something like that.
Something like that. Yeah.
We're both saying at computers. We should just look it up.
We could do that, couldn't we? But preserve the mystery. I will just refer to him as Proto Mesopotamian Twink.
I'm sorry. I looked it up. Enkidu.
Anyone who knows the actual pronunciation of that is very dead. So, unless they have also discovered the secret to immortality.
I do like the version of the Gilgamesh story where they're literally just playing whatever their version of cricket or hurling or whatever their ball and stick game is, and just a portal to the underworld just opens up and swallows their playing ball, and Echidnu dies because he just goes down to the underworld to try and get their ball and fucks up so badly.
He's more of a jock, yeah, than a twink in that story.
He gets given all the advice of like, okay, here's what you don't do, here's who you don't talk to, here's where you must go, and he just does the exact opposite of everything.
Fair.
Yeah.
Protagonist syndrome.
We're well off topic.
Well off topic, yeah. The Monkey King has gotten his new name, Sun Wukong, and has just immediately been put in his place by Sabaody, who's just kind of like, the fuck are you talking about, man? Who the hell do you think you are? Just swaggering up here and saying, oh, I need the secret to immortality, and calling yourself the handsome Monkey King, you ugly fuck. Have you taken a look at yourself? which was a delight. And if you missed that episode, go back and listen to it, because it's like a really, it's a really good roast.
It is important though, that Wukong did not tell Sabaody he wanted to be immortal yet.
Oh, okay.
So he just showed up and said, I want you to be my teacher. He didn't actually ask, or he didn't say why.
So, like, as far as Sabaody's concerned, he could be looking either to learn the secrets of immortality or how to make really great tea.
Yeah, like, he's just is there to learn. And let's get back to the plot, I guess. So
yes, sorry, apologies. Back to the plot, away from the proto-Mesopotamian twinks and the existential questions of immortality, and back to the Monkey King.
Ah, those things are good too. But one day, Sabaody is outside giving a lecture, and it's so good that Wukong starts dancing and jumping around, much like your history professor, I guess.
People get excited about learning, and so these are my favorite people.
Sabaody gets annoyed at him and kind of singles him out, you know, for dancing in his class, and he asks Wukong how long has he been studying with him now. Wukong thinks for a second, and he says, I think it's been 7 years. And only at this point does Sabaody ask what Wukong actually wants to learn.
I mean, I want to say that seems like an oversight, but I don't know what the class-to-teacher ratio is here or anything about Sabaody's availability for office hours, so...
Don't think they ever really specify how many students are here. There's, and like, none of the other students are named. They're just to the other students.
Okay, fair. So, okay, 7 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Wukong just says he wants to learn whatever Sabaody wants to teach. And Sabaody says that there's 360 different schools of Taoism, so which one do you want to learn from that? And Wukong's just, any of them is fine.
Yeah, you pick.
Yeah, so Sabaody asks, okay, how about the practice of the method division? And Wukong asks, what's the method division? And it involves summoning immortals, automatic writing, divination, learning the secrets of pursuing good and avoiding evil. And Wukong, in response to that, asks, could this make me immortal? And Sabaody says, no, it couldn't. And Wukong responds, he doesn't want to learn it then.
Just ask for what you want, guy.
You're going to get more frustrated.
So
Sabaody asks Wukong, does he want to learn the practice of the schools division? And Wukong says, you know, what's the schools division? It's the studying the writings of Confucians, Buddhists, Taoists, Dualists, Moists, and physicians. And Wukong asks, could this make him immortal? And it can't, so he says, no, I don't want to learn it.
Oh, come on, man. I've just done a whole other show with a big chunk about how cool direct communication is, so I'm just ask for what you want, man. Come on.
So next Sabaody suggests the practice of the silence division, which is meditation, inactivity, silence, strict vegetarian diet, yoga, stillness, and solitary confinement. And Wukong asks,
can this make me immortal?
And the answer is no.
I feel like Sabaody should be picking up on a pattern here.
Yeah, he's a bit slow. And Sabaody then suggests the action division, which I think is basically alchemy. I'll quote the paragraph directly. It is gathering the yin to nurse the yang, bending the bow, treading the arrow, and rubbing the navel to pass breath. There are also experimentation with alchemical formulas, burning rushes, and forging cauldrons, taking red lead, making autumn stone, and drinking bride's milk, and the like. I do love the fact that taking red lead appears in the middle of this paragraph. For those who haven't lived in Waterford, red lead is like a hot pink luncheon meat that's supposedly made from ham.
It's its own thing. It's also yesterday did a show where we talked about a con artist who spent some time in prison for the sale of unwholesome meats.
Is that a euphemism for cannibalism?
We don't know, which is the thing. Myself and Matthew Talon, who was the guest, we went into, he's a comedian, but we kind of went into all the things it might possibly be. And red lead, as a luncheon meat, as a Waterford native, I can attest, should probably be under the banner of unwholesome meats, and is something that I think of regularly when I feel myself wavering on my vegetarianism.
Do feel free to like fully plug your other shows and give out the Twitter accounts and everything.
I'm gonna. Sorry, that wasn't like a shameless plug. That just reminded me of it, and I'm just kind of going like, so I've had awful cravings for chicken over the past couple of days, and I'm just kind of like red lead. But the sponginess of it was the most stressing part. It was, yeah. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, in this case, they're probably not talking about that type of red lead. They're probably talking about a type of lead oxide that's used as a pigment that you definitely shouldn't eat.
Worse for your health, but not by as much as you might think.
Yeah, but yeah, don't eat lead of any kind, really, to be honest.
This is an anti-lead eating podcast. We're going to come out and just say that.
Wukong asks, will this make him immortal? And I will again emphatically say, eating lead will not make you immortal. So the answer is no. So Wukong says he's not interested in the action division then. At this point, Sabaody finally loses his patience, jumps down from the lectern and asks, what the fuck do you want? You won't learn this, you won't learn that. Just what is it you're waiting for? He hits Wukong on the head three times, folds his arms behind his back, walks inside, and closes the door behind him.
This is why direct communication is so important.
The story kind of disagrees with you on that, but I'm getting ahead of myself.
Okay.
So all the other students start chastising Wukong for ruining their lecture, but he doesn't care. I quote, he reasoned that the master, by hitting him three times, was telling him to prepare himself for the third watch, and by folding his arms behind his back, walking inside and closing the main doors, he was telling him to enter by the back door so he might receive instructions in secret.
I mean, it seems like a leap to me, but I'm guessing from your previous comment that guess pays off.
So Wukong decides to sneak into his lecturer's bedroom in the middle of the night. And at about midnight, he sneaks out. He sees the back door is ajar, which he takes as a sign that he was correct. And Sabaody is curled up asleep. Wukong doesn't want to wake him, so he just kneels down next to his bed and waits. Eventually, Sabaody wakes up and finds Wukong sitting on the floor staring at him. And he jumps up and asks what the hell he's doing there.
Fair.
Very reasonable when a monkey is talking monkey is staring at you in bed.
When your student has broken into your quarters when anyone has broken in to the place where you sleep in the middle of the night and is hovering over you, creepily staring at you, I feel that your any reaction other than what the fuck should be met with some suspicion.
Yep. So Wukong replies, I was following your order to come in by the back door at the third watch. And Sabaody is delighted and says, since you have solved the riddle, it is an indication that you are destined to learn and I'm glad to teach you.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah. The narrative really just kind of, just really a bit of whiplash there.
Yeah, a little bit.
Where it's just like, Sabaody is like, what the fuck are you doing here? And he's like, oh yes, that hint I gave was real. It's weird.
I am autistic and I don't pick up on some social cues, but I feel that one was significantly opaque that most people would be forgiven for not making that connection.
And those people don't get to be immortal.
Okay, right. So just the super neurotypicals get to be immortal. Answer. I didn't want it anyway.
Yeah, anyway. No, clear communication is good. Please do not leave riddles by hitting people on the head.
Or break into your teacher's quarters in the middle of the night because you think you might have been picking up on something.
Yeah, don't do either of those things, please.
No.
But Sabaody recites a poem that instructs Wukong on the secrets of immortality. I will come back to that, but I'm not going to read the whole thing out now.
Okay.
Meanwhile, Wukong goes back to bed and he keeps what he learned a secret from all the other students. And he practices them by himself for 3 years until Sabaody stops in the middle of giving a lecture and asks Wukong what he's been studying. 7 years before he asked the first time, 3 years till he asks the second time.
He sounds really off.
He really doesn't pay that much attention to his students.
He's self-directed learning. He really is one of those one of those professors who's really there for the research grant and has to do the teaching hours.
Yeah, well, it seems to work for Wukong because he says he's begun to apprehend the nature of all things, which is pretty good for after 10 years.
That's good going. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, that's you know, that's undergrad and a PhD, I guess.
Wow.
So, PhD in everything.
PhD in all the things. Doctorate of everything.
Sabote tells Wukong that even though he's learned the secrets of immortality, he must still guard against the danger of the three calamities.
Ooh.
Very ominous. Wukong is a bit confused as how he could be in danger if he's immortal, but even though he won't age now, he can still be killed.
Okay.
And Sabote tells him that after 500 years, Sabote will send down the calamity of thunder to strike him down, and he has to be able to avoid it, which is, I think, from the description, just... basically, you'll get hit by lightning.
Somebody's sending this down?
Heaven.
Okay.
It just says heaven will do this.
All right. Okay. I thought this was like a really, really, really distant follow-up assessment.
No. I guess it's a test that all immortals have to go through.
Fair. Okay.
And then 500 years after that, the Calamity of Fire will happen, which, if you don't guard against it, will make you spontaneously combust.
Ouch.
And then 500 years after, the Calamity of Wind will happen, which sounds like it shouldn't be the worst one.
No.
But it is. The Calamity of Wind will send a mighty wind which will enter through the top of the skull into the body, passes through the midriff, and penetrates the nine apertures. The bones and flesh will be dissolved and the body itself would disintegrate.
What?
Yeah, it sounds pretty bad.
That is an imagination at work.
An entire hurricane just entering your eyes, nostrils, ears, mouth, and other places all at once, and... just tearing your body to absolute bits. It's fine.
Oh, good grief. Okay. That's cool. I'm awake now.
To avoid these calamities, Sabote offers to teach Wukong either the 36 transformations of the art of the heavenly ladle or the 72 transformations of the art of the earthly multi.
Ooh, I like the sound of the ladle.
Yeah, Wukong doesn't operate on that logic. He just concludes that 72 is a bigger number than 36, so he goes with that one. Sabote whispers something in Wukong's ear, but I quote, "We do not know what sort of wondrous secret he spoke of." And he passed the knowledge of the 72 transformations. But apparently it just took whispering one thing in Wukong's ear.
And this guy has been studying 10 years at this point?
Yeah, that's it. there's no poem or great secret with anything with this one. It's just he said something, and now Wukong knows magic. It's Grant.
Let's just hand wave our way past that one.
Yep. A few days later, Sabote asks Wukong to show off flying to prove his magic. Wukong leaps 50 or 60 feet in the air and walks on the clouds. Now, to be a pedant, clouds are actually thousands of feet in the air, but I suppose they are on top of a mountain. He flies around for a couple of miles and drops back down. Wukong is like, "Hey, do you like my cloud soaring?" And Sabote is like, "Cloud soaring? More like cloud crawling."
Ooh, burn.
It's not phrased like that, but he does actually like say, "No, that's cloud crawling, not cloud soaring."
Might I suggest cloud soaring? More like crowd boring.
Nice. Sabote shows him how it's done, and he teaches him how to travel 108,000 miles in a single somersault, which is decent distance.
That's pretty cool.
And the other students are super impressed by this, and say that Wukong is never going to be out of a job now because he'll always be able to get a job as a courier. Which I love is just...
That's fair!
Yeah, I love is just such a pragmatic... reaction to seeing someone learning how to fly.
Yeah, no, I love it. Cause, like that whole thing about what superpower would you want if you could only pick one? And obviously the answer for me, as it, I guess it is for most trans people, is shape-shifting, because it just would make my life a million times easier. But
yeah.
A close second would be teleportation. Because of all the employment opportunities afforded by the extra legal export import trade. because, you know, you can just, this, yeah, you make a lot of money by getting across borders unnoticed.
Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't even have to do that. You could, like, I'm sure there's, like, lots of people who would pay for legal things to be transported to.
I mean, I guess, yeah. Yeah, if you wanted to go that direction with it, sure.
If you want to be boring. But Wukong's joy over his newfound power doesn't last. One summer, the other students are asking Wukong about his powers, and they ask him to show off, basically, and he is more than happy to do it.
This appears to be his kryptonite.
Yeah, he starts taking requests, and one of the other students asks him to turn into a pine tree, and he does. And as he's doing this, Sabote comes out to see what all the noise is, and he is pissed.
Yeah.
He tells Wukong that by showing off, he's putting his own life in danger because people will want him to teach him his powers, and they'll try and hurt him if he doesn't tell them.
It's a reasonable concern.
Mm. I mean, he could also just, like, teach them. There's no particular reason given, like, why he shouldn't just teach people, other than it's a secret and you should keep it.
Yeah, I mean, why not? Why? Yeah, that's an extremely good point. You know, why can't everyone be immortal? Why must we hoard these secrets? You know, seize the means of immortality production.
But yeah, there's no second chance with this. Sabote just says, no, you fucked up. Go home. You're out of my school. Get lost. And Wukong insists he has a debt to repay to Sabote for teaching him. But Sabote tells him he doesn't owe him anything. Go away. But when you leave, you're bound to end up evil doing. I don't care what you do, as long as you never tell anyone you're my disciple. If you do, I'll skin you alive, break all your bones, and banish your soul to the place of ninefold darkness.
Ouch.
For turning into a pine tree.
Yeah, Jesus, Sabote. Particularly because he apparently did not take much notice of the student for the entire time that they were, you know, allegedly working together, and just to go to that too.
Which is at least 10 years.
Yeah, wow. I guess if you're immortal, that kind of time is probably, you know, in the grand scheme of things, maybe he kind of sees it as this guy's been here a week, but whew.
True, and Wukong himself is a couple hundred years old.
Shit, yeah, fair.
So it's not a huge amount of time for him either, I guess.
Yeah, but still, wow.
But yeah, Wukong, he just promises not to tell anyone, thanks to Bodhi, and flies home.
Okay.
And when he arrives home, back to the Flower Fruit Mountain, all the other monkeys greet him, but they aren't happy either. Someone named the Monstrous King of Havoc has been attacking the Water Curtain Cave for years.
No.
And recently ran off with loot and a load of small monkeys.
And a load of small monkeys?
Yeah, a load of little baby monkeys.
No! Oh, wow, that got dark.
So Wukong takes back up his role as Monkey King and heads north to fight Havoc in the Waterbelly Cave. When he finds him, Havoc is a pretty imposing guy. He's 30 feet tall, has a black iron vest, a dark silk robe, a black gold helmet, and a big scimitar.
Whoa.
Monkey is like 4 foot tall and is empty-handed.
I am appreciating the striking visual description here.
Yeah, and again, that's kind of given in a poem describing all his armor and everything, and how big and imposing he is. And I think that's a nice use of poetry. But I'm not reading them all those out.
Fair.
But Wukong doesn't care. He boasts he could pull the moon down with his bare hands and shouts, "Have a taste of old monkey's fists," and he starts a boxing match. Havoc thinks it would be embarrassing to actually use a sword against an unarmed monkey, so puts it down and starts boxing too. And Wukong actually starts winning because, you know, magic powers, immortality, it helps with boxing, I guess. Havoc picks up his scimitar again in a panic and cuts at Wukong's head. Wukong dodges and then casts a spell called the Body Beyond the Body. He plucks some of his hairs, chews them into tiny bits, and spits them out into the air and shouts, "Change!" And every single little bit of hair turns into another monkey. and they all attack Havok at once, just hundreds of monkeys.
Wow.
Wukong, meanwhile, picks up Havok's scimitar and just cuts his head off. And all the hundreds of monkeys kill the rest of Havok's minions. And Wukong summons his hairs back to his body and kind of dismisses the clones.
One monkey portable army.
Yeah, he uses this spell a lot. It's probably his favorite one.
With good reason.
Yeah, just instant army. It's pretty handy. He looks around the cave after this and realizes there's still a load of other monkeys in the cave. And he's like, wait, why are you still here? Apparently having completely forgotten about the kidnapping in the middle of the fight. I think he was just enjoying himself too much.
Okay.
He frees them and they take all the loot that was stolen and burn down the cave for good measure.
Okay.
And he summons a huge magic wind to carry them all back to the Flower Fruit Mountain.
Oh.
And they all have, all the other monkeys have a massive feast and celebration to welcome their king back. And Wukong tells them about the travels he's been on. And that's chapter two.
Huh.
So it does still go by at a fair clip. And I'm not skipping over all that much. The plot just does rocket ahead a good bit. He's end of chapter two. Our main character is already immortal.
Yeah, wow. You gotta wonder where the story is gonna go from here. I mean, you kind of hit immortality in a massive battle. That's an early peak for chapter. And is that chapter also just like 12 pages long?
I can probably get a word count. Hold on. Give me a minute.
Beep, 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 beep.
Is that your computer calculating word count noise?
Oh, no, just dimming, my dude. Just stimming.
That looks like about a little under 7,000 words.
Okay, wow. Yeah, that's a lot to fit in such a small... Yeah, shit. That's impressive. I really want to actually read one of these translations now, just to kind of get a feel for the language and see what it's like.
Yeah, the language is a bit formal and a bit stiff, for my taste at least. I believe... The novel was actually notable, though, in that it was published in the vernacular rather than in classical Chinese. Actually, I wasn't sure when I was going to fit this in into what episode, but might as well do it now. I have some notes about it.
Yay!
The book was published anonymously, and it was written in, like I said, vernacular Chinese rather than the kind of classical literary Chinese that was normal for publication at the time. So it was, I think, kind of controversial in that. It was published anonymously, but there is a particular person who is generally thought to have probably written it, who is a man called Wu Chengen, and his father was an artisan, but Wu took the imperial exams to kind of become a government official several times.
What is it with pissed off civil servants and satire?
Yeah, that's basically it. He was, what's his name?
Miles Nagopoline?
Yeah, that's exactly.
Or Flann O'Brien, as he was known for. Miles Nagopoline, I think, was the Irish language satire specifically, but Flann O'Brien for English satire. I think he had another pen name as well. I'm trying to. His real name was Brian something.
I've not actually read any of his writing. I just kind of vaguely know about him. No.
Oh, the Third Policeman is my favorite book, or one of my favorite books, which is fabulous. At Swim Two Birds is the one he's most famous for, and has the most kind of satire about the Irish literary scene and everything in it. But I just found it was good, but, and I get where he was coming from with making it so dense. It's purposely that dense. But I just kind of, it didn't have the kind of streak of dark yet mischievous joy running through it that the Third Policeman did, even though the narrative is less, I guess abstract, Yeah, sorry, that's my little waffle about Brian.
No, yeah, I really should
read the Policeman,
them.
Definitely.
Okay. But Wu Chang'en, yeah, he took the kind of government state exams a couple times. He failed them a couple of times until eventually he got it to kind of become a government official. And by the time he passed them, he was actually middle-aged. And he spent all this time getting into the Imperial University in Nanjing and eventually getting a job as an official in Beijing. He worked for a couple of years, I think, and then he just quit again after spending all that time trying to get in because he was
just
absolutely fed up immediately with the kind of corruption and how shit the state bureaucracy was. So he moved back to his hometown and just spent like the rest of his life as a hermit writing stories and living the dream.
So yeah, he after giving up on his treasured dream of being a civil servant, he had to settle for being a writer instead.
Settle for writing one of the like most famous books ever.
Yeah. Wow.
Probably, like, it was published anonymously. He's kind of generally thought to probably be the author, but it's not. There's no way of proving it.
Okay, wow, cool. That is chapter two.
Yeah, and I did have a couple footnotes again.
Yay, footnotes.
So there is an interesting book at the very, very end when Wukong is describing his travels to the other monkeys, where there's a really obvious printing error where he mentions the wrong continent and he kind of repeats himself in a way that doesn't make much sense.
Okay.
And the footnotes like note this is an obvious mistake in the text, but Anthony, you decided, you know, to keep that in the translation as being true to the original text in keeping this error, which I think is just an interesting question of translation. Yeah. and what you should change and what you should fix.
Yeah.
Or not.
So that's interesting with kind of the question about the language there as well, and just kind of what gets lost in translation, what words, you know, obviously the whichever particular word you pick is going to carry a sort of emotional nuance to it.
Yeah.
So yes, that's fascinating that he kind of made the decision to preserve the authenticity of it and kind of point to the fallibility of. Well, I guess I don't know if that is that an author error or a printer error.
It seems like it might be a printer error to me, just in the way it's written. It's repeating, not even repeating. It's like a line that should be like three lines down appears twice, basically.
Wow. Okay.
So it seems like likely a printing error to me, but that's just my own judgment reading a translation of how this is interpreted, like. Obviously, I don't read, I'm not reading the original text. I don't know any Chinese.
No, oh God, I feel like I've been robbed. that's totally unacceptable. I demand to be told this story by someone who's read it in the original ancient Chinese. Which I imagine it's still a world away, like worlds away from modern vernacular, like either. You know, Chinese isn't its own language, obviously.
Well, it's a book, so like Chinese is a written language. There's no like one Chinese spoken language, but there is kind of a Chinese written language, I think, if I understand things correctly. So,
I mean, isn't there written differences between, say, Cantonese and other?
Probably.
I don't know. I do not know enough about this to judge. I will Google that later.
There is probably regional dialects and differences there as well, but the characters used are generally ideograms. They represent a thing rather than a particular word. So, as far as I understand, like there's certain characters that are used in China, Korea, and Japan that mean basically the same thing across all of them, even though they say them differently.
Interesting. Okay.
Which is, and then it's part of the reason, like, I think there's like, they use like three different alphabets in Japan. And some of them are ideograms and some of them are phonetic. I'd be saying I think a lot. This is, I do not study any of these languages. I know very little.
Well, you know more than me.
But speaking of translation, I do want to read out at least a little bit of the poem about immortality, because
okay.
I find it funny because I am very immature.
Oh, amazing. I'm so here for this.
So, all power resides in the semen, breath, and spirit. Store these securely, lest there be a leak. Lest there be a leak. Keep within the body. Heed my teaching, and the way itself will thrive. Hold fast oral formulas, so useful and keen, to purge concupiscence, to reach pure cool.
Concupiscence?
Yes. Yeah, which is a word I was unfamiliar with. Thank you for correcting my pronunciation. But
I think I got that right. I don't know.
Basically means horniness.
So no wanking.
Yeah.
And you'll be immortal.
No wanking seems to be a pretty big part of this.
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing I did not want immortality anyway.
That's only one section of the poem. There's other bits, but I wanted to read that bit out because I'm really immature.
I appreciate this.
And indulging that idea further, there's the footnotes go into kind of the meaning behind more of the terms and the various ideas brought up in this poem. And I won't just read through footnotes on Chinese alchemy, but... one thing I found interesting is in China there's 5 classical elements rather than 4. There's fire, metal, wood, earth, and water. But then each of these are associated with a specific force in the body. So, and that's related to like when it says sperm, breath, and spirit, it's referring to these elements in this kind of alchemical sense, which is, I guess, mixed with the literal sense, but not entirely. So Shen is fire and spirit. Po is metal and vigor. Hun is wood and soul. Yi is earth and will. And Jing is water and sperm. The most important one.
Jing?
Jing.
Jing. Jing is what? are we gonna see the etymology of the word jizz here? I'm gonna look that up after this. Like I've got other stuff to do today, but this is now priority. Sorry, I don't make the rules.
And if you're as immature as me, you might start looking up the relationships between like the 5 elements in kind of classical Chinese elements, and then tenuously draw links back to the body forces ideas just to giggle a bit.
Yay!
So you have a kind of a rock, paper, scissors relationship between the 5 elements.
Okay.
Where they're ones that complement and kind of defeat each other. So fire melts metal, metal chops wood, wood parts earth, earth dams water, and water extinguishes fire.
Okay.
And if we
if
we kind of relate these back to the bodily forces, and again, I'm not trying to like say this is a real idea in classical Chinese medicine or making fun of like Chinese philosophy. I'm
Quiva, I hear all your very necessary and very careful, and I'm sure very you know, well thought out disclaimers, but all I'm hearing is jizz kill spirit.
Yeah, you got it in one. So a spirit beats vigor, vigor beats soul, soul beats will, will beats sperm, and sperm beats spirit.
Come on, my spirit. Okay, cool. That's yeah. Wonderful, and that's made my day a million times better. Thank you.
I did have one more footnote that's a bit more nerdy and a bit less immature. Which is just about the being able to leap 10,800 miles thing.
Okay.
So I was curious about what 108,000 miles means, you know, when I'm reading a 400-year-old Chinese novel. It's obviously not meaning a mile as defined by the International Yard and Pound Agreement.
Yes.
The number 108 is a significant number in Buddhism, and it shows up in a lot of places throughout the book. So that is definitely the original number in the text, not...
Not a translation, okay.
Yeah, not him rounding numbers when he's translating units in the text, and there's no appendix on units despite the otherwise comprehensive footnotes, which I find very disappointing. But looking it up, there's a unit called a Li that's often called a Chinese mile, so I'm pretty sure that's what mile is referring to here. And nowadays Li is defined as exactly 500 meters, but units of measurement vary quite considerably over time. Wikipedia actually has a table of the variations of Chinese units of length over the course of different dynasties, and it cites a book called The Magic Square, Cities in Ancient China by Alfred Schintz as the source for this data. So I'm not just making this up. I am just getting it from Wikipedia, but Wikipedia actually does have a source if you want to look up that book.
Cool.
And what complicates this is the fact that much like the definition of a ton, there's two different ways to define a li. So there's a smaller unit called a bu, and a li could be 300 or 360 bu.
Okay.
So that gives us two different approximations. But according to this table on Wikipedia, a Ming Dynasty li is either between 451 to 478 meters, or it's between 541 to 574 meters.
Cool.
So given that, that gives us a lower bound for Sun Wukong's jump as 48,700 kilometers and an upper bound of 62,000 kilometers. I was going to make some sort of direct comparison, like, you know, that's the distance between here and here, to give a kind of idea of the scale, but actually both of those numbers are larger than the circumference of the Earth.
So, yeah, pretty impressive. And
so he could just jump from anywhere on Earth to anywhere on Earth.
Oh, that would be nice.
So you know, writers have no sense of scale is definitely at least 400 years old.
World people don't maths good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you have people like me to come in with a physics degree and nitpick units completely pointlessly.
I mean, the point was enjoyment, and in that sense, it was I believe necessary.
So yeah, that's where we stand with chapter 2 of Journey to the West. Sun Wukong is back to ruling as the Monkey King, but now has untold magical powers to help him in that. I'm sure nothing could possibly go wrong.
Yeah, that kind of power combined with that sort of hubris. No, absolutely. It's all going to be fine. Totally.
It's all going to be completely fine.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to see what happens next.
Yes. And let's close off with plugs.
Yay! Okay. I keep forgetting things I have to plug. I'm sorry, I'm very tired. But the reason I'm very tired is that I was up most of the night working on a new show I have on the Hysteria Ireland Network called Burning Shit with MJ Stokes, where comedians and other performers and people who owe me favors talk about their feelings and light things on fire. And it's a lot of fun. I also have my own podcast called They Did What Now, which basically it's all about the ballsiest moves in history, and I get funny people to tell me their favorite stories about that. And an currently online comedy night called The Nerd Herd, where again I make people talk about things they really like and make jokes about that. So lots of other fun shows on History Ireland as well. If you like this, you might particularly enjoy Hades and Gentlemen, which is a late night talk show format hosted by Hades, God of the Underworld, where he speaks to various gods and dead people. And that is one of my favorites, and it's very cool. And Ian Lynham runs that. Social media, I am at Taoiseach O'Trash on Twitter, and MJ Stokes, spelled E-M-J-A-Y, on Instagram.
I am I am way less busy than MJ, who is amazing.
Aww.
But you can find me on Twitter at OAK or WF, where you will probably find me complaining about editing this, I imagine. And I have made a Twitter for this podcast as well, which Yay. Is at Monkey King Pod.
Yay! Awesome.
And yeah, please join us in the next episode, which I am very, very excited about.
Woo! More action than the massive hair monkey fight. So I'm yeah, okay, that's a high standard to beat, but yes, excited about that.
It's honestly amazing. please like just listen to episode 3, please. Which we haven't recorded yet, but amazing. I'm still like really confident it's gonna be amazing.
Fabulous.
Bye.
Bye now.